Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
My name is Ben Chinatown Bolin. I just made that one up.
Chinatown?
Yeah.
Really?
Nobody wrote in with that one.
Oh, okay. All
but right. I don't think it'll work. It just felt good. Oh, yeah. So what do? I write some videos. I hang out with you. I do some secretive stuff, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And
very covert.
You're covert. How about that?
I wasn't trying to hurt your feelings.
Was it? I didn't do the best
retort.
No.
Hey, I got a question for you.
All right.
This is not related to today's topic, really.
Okay.
This is, I'm blindsiding you with this.
All right.
I am within about 1,200 miles of 100,000 miles on my car.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So I'm like 98.8 or something like that.
All right, yeah.
Have you ever heard of anybody kind of like celebrating 100,000 miles on their car? In any way? Like any kind of, like what do you do when you turn 100,000 miles in your car?
Dang, man, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of... Now, have you heard of someone doing that?
Well, I can tell you where a couple of my cars have turned 100,000 miles because I remember exactly on what road and exactly where I was when it happened.
That's so cool.
Because I've had a few cars that have had a lot of miles on them. And,
well, that's good. You take good care of them.
I put a lot of miles on my cars in the past and a little bit less now, but still a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember exactly where I was. Exactly where I was on the road and you know, almost what was going on at the time even.
Yeah, what should you do? What's
a
good thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I had a friend who, this is kind of funny.
What?
I don't recommend this one either, by the way, for an obvious reason, but he was up north when his car turned 100,000 miles, and he pulled over to the side of the road, got out under the hood of the car, just kind of sat, you know, one leg up on the bumper, lit up a cigarette, smoked it, kind of just looked around, you know, take it all in, get back in the car, and continue on the way.
You know, I think that's a little muted.
It's a little dramatic.
Yeah, it's
a little dramatic, but
it's introspective.
It is. I don't know how to. I mean, that's almost like out of a movie or something. Someone would do something kind of goofy like that. But
yeah.
But what do you think you should do for a 100,000 mile celebration? I guess
I don't know.
Honk the horn, flash the lights.
I mean, that'd be hard to explain if someone said, why are you tailgating me and blowing on your horn? And you're like, no, I'm not mad at you.
I don't know. I just thought maybe you'd had something in mind.
Okay. First thing.
Fireworks?
I would say fireworks are legal in this state. Some fireworks. Well, actually, yeah, you don't want to drive around with them in your trunk just on the off chance.
No.
But what if you could, I don't know. Take a picture and leave it somewhere or put up a little sign on the side of the road.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's as simple as just a decal for the rear bumper that says...
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen other cars with that.
Yeah, or one of those, you know how some people rip off the wartime planes and they have little stamps on the side?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you're not really a decal guy on the cars.
No, I'm not. I like to keep it clean. I used to be, but now I keep it clean. There's nothing on it.
Maybe you should you should definitely take a picture of the odometer.
Well, see, okay, there's one suggestion right there. I guess you could do that when it just says exactly 100,000, but that could be dangerous. What if I'm on the highway?
Life on the edge, Scott.
This is trouble.
Life on the edge.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's
move on.
So you have 100,000 miles on your car pretty soon, but how old is it?
I'm getting close. It's 2005.
Oh.
I'm so used to saying 19-something.
Yeah.
It's an 1890... something.
It's a 1670.
it's a Stutz something.
So
Stutz Bearcat, I think.
It's going to be a while before you can actually take the trusty Civic to become a member of the license plate group we're about to talk about.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know what? You're right. Yeah. And, you know, that's getting right to the heart of what I have to say about this topic. Would I feel good about putting an antique plate on my Honda Civic when it's eligible?
Here we go.
Would I feel good about
would
it?
Would you?
Well, let's find that out.
Let's see. Let's build towards this.
Would I do it?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the idea. A lot of and here's the way this came about, because we've talked about historic or antique plates on vehicles for a while now. We've mentioned it a few weeks and kind of said, well, maybe we should do it, maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah.
What inspired me to finally make the leap on this one is that I saw a Volkswagen Rabbit convertible from the early 80s with an antique license plate on it. and it blew my mind.
Early 80s.
It was a convertible. The Cabrio, is that what they called them?
Cabriolet.
Something like that. But it was an early 80s Volkswagen Rabbit convertible. And it had historic plates. And this thing was, I mean, this specific vehicle was a pile of junk. It was it was terrible looking. I mean, it just wasn't
maintained.
No, and not only that, it's a early 80s Volkswagen Rabbit. What's it doing with antique license plates? I mean, maybe I'm way off, Ben. But to me, that's not a collector car. That's not an antique car. But now someone who collects those and and preserves them.
Oh my God, they're writing the email right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Well, that's okay. I understand. And there's going to be a lot of this. And I want to right now. Let's just head this off.
Let's do it.
I want to tell everybody, I guess, that it's not – this whole thing is not intended to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, if you happen to drive one of the vehicles that we're talking about, it's not a shot at your vehicle. It's not meant to hurt you in any way. It's just meant to – and I'm kind of smiling when I'm saying this because it's not intentionally mean. All we're saying is that really a classic or is that really an antique at this point? Because some of the ones that I'm going to mention here are – we'll do this later. I got a list of cars that are now eligible for antique and classic plates.
Oh, man. You're making me feel old.
Some of them are – oh, they're not really antiques in my mind or they're not collectible in any way. But then again, there's always somebody that can argue the other side
of
that.
Sure, yeah, because there's so much the appreciation is so subjective, too.
Yeah.
What we're talking about when we talk about historic license plates, I've got a quick and dirty definition here.
Oh, great, yeah.
Okay, so to qualify for these historic license plates, or some states call them antique license plates, the vehicle in question has to be at least 25 years old or older, right? And in some states, it has to be solely as a collector, owned solely as a collector's item, used for exhibition or educational purposes. Which means that now that one, that specific definition actually comes from the state of Missouri.
Okay.
So we,
it's different in all states.
Right. You're stumbling on it.
Yeah.
25 years or older, though, is pretty much the common.
Yeah, that's common.
That's
it goes down to 20, and it goes up to 30.
Okay.
So 25, you're right, is right in the ballpark. And there's some even odd ones, like Michigan is 26 years.
26.
So it has to be just beyond that threshold of 25.
So everybody take care of your 24-year-old cars.
That's right. Yeah, and you could be eligible. Now, you might say, well, why the heck would I want to get an antique plate anyways?
Good question.
Right? Okay, well, the reason is that because you get a cut on the price of your vehicle registration. And sometimes, in some cases, there's no fee. Or very, very reduced fee, and oftentimes it's good for longer than 1 year.
Right.
So you can see the benefit of this already.
Like 3 years or something?
And not only that, you get out of vehicle inspections. Like if you have a safety inspection, an emissions inspection, you're no longer eligible for those inspections or no longer, I guess, required to have those inspections.
Yeah, they don't apply to you.
Which can be costly when you get to a vehicle that's, 25 years old. It's to your benefit, I guess, to say, well, I just don't want to do it this year. I'll get this plate, and it's covered.
Because a lot of older vehicles just aren't designed to those emission standards,
No, exactly. Yeah, to what we're expecting now, and a lot of them it requires, if you're having an emissions test, like you mentioned, and it doesn't pass – you have to go somewhere and try to make it pass, and you have to spend X number of dollars until it does pass, or you've reached your limit of what you can spend on the vehicle in order to try to get it to pass.
And one other thing that we should probably mention that's kind of slippery with this. Some states, if you have an antique or an historic license plate, they let you transfer that to another older vehicle if you have another one as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So if it's like, let's say you have two 1950s Chevys or something, just cherry rides, classics, and you take care of them and you have the one license plate. Apparently, in some places, you can transfer it to another one.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that was possible. That's cool.
I don't know. I think there's.
So it's registered to the owner.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And for, now somebody will probably check me on this if I'm wrong, but I don't have my notes for that in front of me, but yeah, I'm pretty sure in some states you can do that.
Okay. Now, in others, again, this is different in every state, it seems like. They've all got their own rules.
Sure.
In other states, it may be non-transferable, but you may only have to pay once. And here's the type of numbers we're talking about. And let me dig through my notes here for a second. But the difference you're talking about is, like, it could be $50 a year. It could be $100 a year difference. So, I mean, you know, a lot of times you'll pay less for historic plate for that's good for multiple years than you will for a standard plate that's good for one year only.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's definitely a benefit to having these plates if your vehicle qualifies for it. And then every state has kind of the, their version of what qualifies as a classic or historic vehicle.
I feel some finger quotes coming on.
Yeah, kind of. Now, you can imagine, there's a lot of people that argue both ways for this one.
Sure.
There's some purists that say, no, it has to be an unmodified antique original vehicle from this era, and that's a classic antique vehicle, and only this can be allowed. It has to go up to for review if it is or not.
Right.
Others say, now, as long as it's a model year that meets the requirement, then it's good. Others say, like, it could be slightly modified, and that's fine as well. But you'll see that there are differences in this, that there's classic and antique, and then there's also street rods in some cases and then again, even in that case, someone may apply for an antique license plate, which is good longer and cheaper. For multi years, if not the rest of the life of the vehicle or the owner, as opposed to going for a street rod license, which is what their car really qualifies for, because it's heavily modified, that costs them not only an initial hit of, like, say, let's say $50, and then an additional $35 a year. So, it just comes down to what's your vehicle, what are you comfortable paying, I guess, are you going to be truthful about what modifications you've done to your vehicle and what it truly is?
Like, what's a deal breaker modification, just for an easy example?
I get an easy example would just be, a new engine.
Let's say you've got
a Ford Model T with a 454 Chevy engine that, clearly wasn't the engine that came in the vehicle to begin with, but, it's a street rod, and that's a heavily modified vehicle, and that's simple. There's a lot of other, modified vehicles you can talk about, but that's just, to get the point out that it's not stock original antique.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, there's just a lot of argument back and forth about this whole thing.
And it goes into a gray area, too, in when you talk about modifications, because for some vehicles, there are no extant manufacturers of certain parts, so you have to get new parts.
Yeah, now
you have to get fabricated.
I suppose if you're now that's another thing. You can have reproduction parts, but it's that's a tough one, Ben.
Don't let me corner you, man.
No, it comes down to kind of like what the club will allow and what if you're in a motor club, they may say, like, well, you're not really driving an original now because you've got a fiberglass body on your car.
We can't hang out anymore.
I can understand that one, but let's say that, the company that makes door handles is no longer around.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to buy, the correct door handles for your vehicle, but they're not available, and you can buy these reproductions that look the same. Does that really matter? Does that make it not really an antique? I don't think so. I mean, I think it's still an antique vehicle, and you've done your best to preserve the way that looks. And handles, really, come on. It's not like you're replacing the whole body or the engine or the suspension or interior.
But then it goes back to that old ongoing argument about the letter versus the spirit of a law.
True, true. I guess, you're right.
So what do you have any, like, egregious? I want to hear the dirt, man. I want you to go for the blood.
Okay, I don't know if I'm really going for the blood. I guess there's nothing that really it doesn't bother me that much, really. Now it does when we get to the examples that I'll talk about later. But if you have a car that's from the 50s, 40s, 30s, even 60s, I can understand wanting to get a classic or an antique plate. It depends on kind of what it is to me.
Sure.
But then again, here's where the tricky part comes in. How do we define what is an antique or collectible vehicle? And that's going to be different for everybody. So let's say that you've got a 1966 Volkswagen Beetle.
Okay.
I would be fine putting a classic or antique license plate on that vehicle, right? Some people might not.
Really?
They might say that that's not really anything that's unique enough because they made 15 million of those things. Or they made,
I see.
I just don't know if somebody would be opposed to that in any way. I'm just taking that as an example.
I think that's a good example because the 60s is a perfect time frame for us to talk about this. You know, let us not forget that the definition of a classic is always made by future generations.
Well, yeah, that's true. It is.
It's true.
But you're still talking about a clearly defined, yeah, there's like a year limit to this.
Yeah, there is
now,
a year
now,
limit.
Now, remember we talked about the 20, 25, 30 year thing?
Yes.
Okay, well, what if you find a car that's now, boy, I'm still getting ahead because I want to go into this list,
yeah,
but I don't want to yet.
Okay.
There are a lot of vehicles that now fall within that historic era, I guess, that, you know, past a certain point that would qualify as historic or antique vehicles that you and I might say, I don't really think that one should get it.
Yeah,
that's the gray area.
You know what? I see where we're going with this. I'm gonna ride this one out with you, man, because I agree.
So, okay, let's just go through a couple of quick examples here of like Maryland. They have some limits set here on what's allowed and what's not allowed. I think I also have some for Indiana and Michigan. We can just quickly go through
them.
To qualify for historic plate, your vehicle must not have been substantially altered, remodeled, or remanufactured from its original construction and must be 20 model years or older. So Maryland is 20 model years.
Mm.
But it does say must not be substantially altered, remodeled, or remanufactured. A historic vehicle of 60 years or older can obtain a one-time permit that's non-transferable. So they pay for it once, they're done. That's it. So, but it has to be above 60 years old. So there's that whole 40 years in between there where you still have to pay for it every year.
Yeah, okay.
The last thing is, and this is one that you'll see in a lot of states, and I had a classic vehicle one time, or classic plates on a vehicle one time, and this was one that caused me a little bit of trouble, but I think most people work around this one a little bit.
Was this on your British car?
Yeah, my MG.
Yeah.
Okay. It had a 66 MG. And I qualified for plates in Michigan when I was there. And it was good for 10 years. And it was only $30, I think, to register the car.
Wow.
So that's for 10 years, $30. $3 a year.
Jeez.
And the plate is stamped with the year. I think it would have expired this year. I think it was up in 2010. It didn't make it that, you know, I got rid of the vehicle, but, the plate stayed with me, of course. It doesn't go, you know, transfer on, but, the one thing that keeps a lot of people back from this, now that would have been $100 a year to, just put a regular plate on it. So you see the benefit there.
Yeah.
The problem is that these vehicles that are classified as historic are supposed to be used only for exhibitions, club activities, parades, tours, and occasional transportation to and from events. Like if you're going to go to a club meeting that's in a park, they allow that. And if you have to take it in for service, if you can drive it there and drive it back, that's allowed. But it's
not to the grocery store.
These are not daily drivers. So if you want to get right down to the letter of the law, when you see a car with an antique or historic plate, it should not be going to and from work every day. It should be parades, club events, fun activities like that. And, when we get to our list of why, some vehicles that qualify and some that I've seen, that's when this becomes questionable because I can't see a lot of the cars that I'm talking about in parades. I just can't see it. And then there's another one in Maryland that's a street rod license, street rod plate, I guess.
Okay, and that's a different plate.
It's a different plate. And this one must be 25 years or older.
Okay.
So it's a little bit older. But they have to have been substantially altered from the manufacturer's original design.
They're required to be substantially altered. That makes perfect sense.
So for street rod, it has to be substantially altered. It can't be closer to the historic, era.
Mm-hmm.
They also have to, again, same thing, have to be used in club activities, parades, and they have to certify that the vehicle will not be used for general daily transportation, or for the transportation of passengers or property on highways.
How do they certify that? They sign an affidavit or something?
They must have to sign something when they go in and say that I will not use this for daily transportation, nor will I use it to shuttle people from here to there, or will I use it for work because they don't want you carrying, wood with your antique truck, that you're not paying anything for registration for on the highways that, the tax dollars are supporting. So, that's the reason behind that.
I gotta be honest with you, man. I'm kind of chomping at the bit about this list now too, because originally I was sort of as they say in Tennessee, where I'm from, I was sort of against it when you.
Can I make one more quick note here, and then we're done? I promise this is it, and then we'll go into that list.
Well, no, you just made a really good point, though, about the parade. Could you see a car in a parade?
Yeah.
For me, I think that may have become my new, you turned me on to this side.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
See, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I can understand, you know, you see the parade of vehicles that often has convertibles, and a lot of them are new.
That's
fine, but they don't have antique plates on them.
Mm-hmm.
They have just a standard plate on them, and usually it's maybe a car dealer that offers up five of the same kind of convertible to carry the prom queen down the middle of Main Street, or the football team, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting us on a tangent.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I'm just saying, your rhetorical skills are are outwitting me.
All right, the last thing that I want to mention here, and then we'll get into our list, I promise, but Indiana, as well as other states, this is just the one I have the example for. Indiana will allow you to display a vintage license plate, which is from the year the car was manufactured. So if you can go to a swap meet or a pawn shop or whatever and find a license plate from the year that your vehicle is made, let's say you have a 57 Chevy.
Okay.
And you go find a 1957 Indiana license plate. And you want to put that plate on your car, even though it wasn't originally issued to your vehicle, you're allowed to do that in Indiana. But you do have to apply for a standard historic tag as well, which you pay for. And then you're allowed to, you have to make sure that you meet all the qualifications we talked about before.
Sure.
They're,
the age.
Yeah, the typical stuff,
the
right?
The driving restrictions.
Exactly. But this is as of January 2008. If you want to display the vintage plate instead of the new plate, which you do legally now have, you've got paperwork and you have to keep that plate in the vehicle with you at all times. So you have to keep it, in the glove box or under the seat or whatever. You can put the vintage plate in the car, but it costs you an additional $48 for the privilege to do that.
That's so weird. Why would they make that a law?
I don't know. That is a little strange, but, I guess it's just to deter people from just putting a vintage plate on the vehicle.
And not
paying, the amounts that are due and not keeping the original, the historic plate with them, et cetera. I don't know. Maybe that's a flawed logic
But I think it's neat, though. It seems well-intentioned.
Yeah,
people want to have that look.
So it just has to be the year of manufacture of your vehicle, of course, for the state that, was made in. In this case, it's Indiana. And it has to be in good condition. Can't be there's a short list here. It says it can't be it has to be metal. Can't be any other material. Can't be fiberglass or some reproduction. Has to be the original metal plate. Can't be altered in any way. You can't change it to say anything that you want it to. No fading or minimal fading. Also,
that makes sense. So
can't
it's
be
still visible.
Exactly. I can have a little bit of minor rust, but not much. It can't be overly rusty. That's judgment call, I guess.
Yeah.
Plate can't be bent. It has to be straight so that it can be mounted correctly. And I think your plate has to match the plate that you registered with the state. So you can't just swap out plates and say that you've got the right to do it anyways and find a better plate later and put it on. You have to keep the plate with the vehicle that you registered, et cetera.
Okay.
It has to stay together. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. They allow you to do that. And I know that other states are following suit with that. They're allowing people to display vintage plates as long as they keep the other plate in the vehicle.
That's kind of recent, only a couple of years back.
Yeah.
I wonder what prompted them to do that,
I don't know. I think it's a good idea, though, because I like seeing, a 1927 Ford with a 27 license plate. I think that's kind of cool. Yeah.
It's probably one of the main reasons.
I've seen that many, many times, too, because, you pull up to a vehicle in traffic and maybe on a Saturday or Sunday, and they're out, just stretching the car a little bit, which is allowed.
Yeah.
And, you think, what the heck is that? And then you see the plate says 1931. And you're like, oh, that's a 31 Chevrolet.
I feel like I've seen that a couple times.
Yeah.
It just makes me think that there must be someone who was so into the authenticity of their car that they wrote their congressman.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's probably what happened.
That's likely what happened. I mean, otherwise everybody would have the historic plate issued by the state.
Mm-hmm.
So
give me these parade cars, man.
All right. Here's the scoop on this. And remember, these all qualify now, but for every one of them, I have to say, I don't think so. I really do. Because when you hear the list, understand they're not, to me, these aren't classics or antiques, but they do meet the definition, in our state or in several states, really, for a classic plate. They qualify for this. And I've seen a couple of these on the road.
Welcome to I Don't Think So with Scott Benjamin.
That's right. How about a 1984 Chevy Chevette?
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of parade would that be in?
You know what? It qualifies. I mean, do you see what I mean? Like, there's this whole era of vehicles, these early 80s vehicles that now qualify that I just don't think have the look of a classic vehicle. Now, that's purely up to, someone's opinion, their viewpoint, but I just don't see it. I don't see a classic look in the Ford Pinto.
But is that another one?
Well, sure, the Ford Pinto is one. Yeah, because it was the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
So that one way qualifies for it, but how many of those do you see around?
In parades. See, parades are the sticking point for me now.
I mean, that's just one that you can pick on, I guess.
Cars in the 80s, Scott, I mean, a lot of people are still using vehicles from the 80s as their daily driver.
That's the point, because, you know, you and I know, and I saw a blogger wrote about this too, but he said, I'm scuffling here, but it was this kind of... This is exactly how I feel too, but it says my biggest complaint about antique vehicle license plates is that it's kind of a myth. It's like he doesn't say it's a myth, but I think it's like a lot of people are just trying to sidestep the law in this case.
Oh yeah,
and I really do believe that. But he says that if your car is over a certain age, 25 years in Virginia is where he's from, and you see that. He says a lot of people, try to do it to avoid the annual safety inspection that's due there. And I don't know if it costs or if they just won't pass it or whatever, but he says, who do you really think gets these antique plates? He said, it's the people that are driving what he calls death traps down the road, alongside you and I on the road.
Ooh.
That are not getting, that are not getting the safety inspection that you and I have to get in order to maintain safety on the road.
Them's fighting words,
yeah,
Scott.
I know. But he says, and I'm reading, remember.
Yeah. Reading we're reading blog, someone says, else's blog.
He says, he says, the pieces of crap won't pass inspection, so Virginia gives them antique plates. And then he goes on to say that, the laws – state that cars with antique plates don't have to have the inspection, et cetera. But he says when one, some clown is driving in a 1978 Toyota Corolla with no floorboards and antique plates, he said, what that's all about, right? And that's, I feel sort of the same way. I really
do. He's alleging conspiracy, though, on the part of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
And I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings. I really don't. But he's kind of got my theory down here is that, vice versa, whatever.
He's not near as nice as you are.
No, but I'm trying to be nice about it. But, I mean, look at my list here. 1985, all the K cars that Chrysler made.
Wow.
Do you remember those K cars?
Yeah.
Those all now qualify for classic vehicle status or antique plates.
Oh, man, I feel so old, Scott.
Remember, like, the Reliant K and the Dodge 600 and the old Chrysler LeBaron, the one that was real boxy?
Yeah.
Those all qualify for historic plates. I've only got a couple more here, really.
Man, we qualify for historic plates.
Okay, Toyota Corollas, Honda Accords, and to show that I'm not being biased here, the 1985 Honda CRX. I love the CRX, but I don't think that it deserves antique or classic status.
Okay.
Not yet. Maybe in 50 years it will. I don't know. I just don't see it. I don't see it as, the Jaguars from the 1930s or the Morgans or, I don't know, anything. Bentleys, Bugattis, whatever.
I'm going to be kind of a jerk and say this. You've got me on your team on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think 20 to 30 years is still too low. When I think of classic cars, I'm thinking more like 30 to 40 years old, with 30 being the bottom level, for me, Some of the 70s muscle cars to me are considered classics in my head. What's that?
They're worthy.
Yeah, they've been around. And then there's that age restriction. So maybe the age cap should just be raised.
Maybe. I know that. Did we mention one that was 30 years, right?
Right. We did.
I don't remember what state that was, but.
That was Maryland.
I got two more examples here. And these maybe will be the ones that put the cap on it for you.
Ooh, let's get this.
Let's
get these angry emails.
The early Chrysler minivans. Chrysler minivans. There's Chrysler minivans out there.
Not
cool. The very first minivans, because Chrysler.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, Chrysler invented the minivan.
Yeah.
Chrysler minivans are now eligible for antique and classic plates, and you're shaking your head.
I'm shaking my head. I don't want to accept it.
See my point.
See your point.
That's a good example, right?
I was skeptical.
How about
first.
This one? This is my last one.
All right.
Steel yourself. You ready?
Hang on. Yes.
Okay. The 1985 Yugo is now eligible for classic and antique
license
plates.
That's ridiculous.
So it's not... It's not an impossibility that you may see a 1985 Yugo on the street with classic or antique historic license plates.
I don't want to offend people, of course. I'm not saying it's ridiculous for that car to ever be considered a classic.
No.
I do think it's ridiculous for it to be considered a classic right now. 1985?
Yeah.
1985?
Sure.
The vast majority of our listeners were born
1985. That was 25 years ago. So, wow. You know, in Michigan, they'd have to wait one more year.
Yeah.
Where was it? Maryland?
Yeah, Maryland. 5 more years.
No, in Maryland, it's qualified for the last 5 years.
Oh, you're right.
It could have qualified in 2005.
Yeah.
So you see the point that I'm making here is that maybe some deserve it, maybe some don't, but there's a gray area, and you and I can't define it.
No.
I know that. I mean, honestly, our listeners can't define it. I don't know if anybody really can define it. It's almost like something has to go up to a review board where they say yes and no, and it has to be made up of a bunch of different experts, you know, that say like this is the qualifications and it's much more strict.
Well, how about this? You know, it might seem like we're taking down a little bit. So let's bring it up when we're closing.
Okay.
Because it sounds like what we're basically talking about, to everybody who's midway through writing me those angry emails for calling the Yugo ridiculous.
Please don't. I mean, because we know people collect them. We know people restore them. We know people – there's probably some in a museum somewhere because –
people take really good care of them,
they're part of history. They really are. However, they're not a classic or antique automobile in my eyes.
At least not yet.
In my eyes.
Okay. I would say at least not yet.
Okay. Very good.
But I think in a few more years, it's quite possible. It's just too recent. 1985 is too recent to me.
Okay.
Am I just being old? Am I an old person doing that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So thank you, Scott.
Yeah.
Thanks for backing me up.
Coming from another much older person.
So what we're really talking about, if you want to take it to a little more open-minded level, is the same basic question that humanity has wrestled with forever, since the days of yore, which is how do we objectively determine these sort of subjective things? What is art, you know? Or what is the difference between prose and poetry? Or, you know, I'm reaching for this, but it is true that when we talk about classic car, we're talking about a certain element of contextual history. We're talking about beauty with a capital B. We're talking about art. So at what point does it move from being a 1985 Yugo to being a 1985 classic car? And I think it's going to have to be another couple years, man, honestly.
Another couple decades, I think.
Yeah, I'm being optimistic.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, I know it's just a sticky situation, and I'm sure that, you know, people at the License Bureau have to deal with this actually all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whether or not someone's really telling them the truth about something, but... I'm not going to drive it to work, but it's a 1980 Corolla, and, you know, I don't have another car.
Let me let you know that just to be, because of course, you know, I'm completely above the board with you. You're one of my trusted few in the circle, right? Scott, I completely agree with everything you're saying, and I'm okay with how mad you will be with me, how angry you'll be when I totally do what you're talking about.
Oh. Yeah.
I will at least have another car or something.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I won't be mad with you, but
should I just not tell
but
you?
But I think I know what you're going to say. Go ahead and do it. Go ahead.
I'm totally going to get one of those license plates.
So you're going to hang on to the Monte Carlo.
Oh, if I can hang on to the Monte Carlo
for
that
25
long.
Years, and on that 25th year, you're going to register it as a historic car.
And I'm still going to drive it.
Okay, got it.
I might.
Got it. Now, see, I wouldn't feel right doing that in my Civic.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets to that point, I mean, it'll have a million miles on it apparently, but you know, I think I wouldn't be able to do it. I know that I would be, I guess, pushing it every time I took it out because I felt comfortable in my car. I would rarely drive it, and I really did pretty much stick to that rule. But on weekends, I would take it out and just kind of stretch it a little bit. But I'd drive it for a long time on the weekends, just around town. And I was always a little bit nervous that, you know, someone was going to question me what I was doing. So I always, you know, I thought, well, I could say I'm going to this shop in the area. And it's not, you know, very nice to do that. But, you know, I always had a story lined up, you know, that
you shouldn't have to have an alibi for a weekend drive.
No, and the thing is, you know, if you're just stretching it and keeping it running, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, if you're going to use it every day to go back and forth to work and the police officer notices you in this car going back and forth every day of the week, then they may pull you over and question you, and then you've got some splaining to do.
Some splaining.
Yeah,
I love
you got
that
some splaining to do because, you know, you're going to have to pay either a fine, and they may take that plate away from you, and then, you know, fine you in addition to making you get a legitimate registration for your vehicle that you use for daily use.
And then you will have to get an emissions test.
Exactly. Yeah, all that, you know, everything that comes along with that. There's a lot of legal issues that happen, too. So just keep it on the up and up, and you're okay.
I've had some fun with this one. Maybe later we could do a podcast about all the different types of license plates, because there's so many.
Sure.
I want those diplomat license plates. You know, they get to park anywhere, like doctors.
Is it true?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm kind of making that up. I'm not sure. But they do look really cool.
Yeah, they do. You're right.
You like Monty Python?
I do.
And now for something completely different.
Listener mail.
Okay, yes, that's right. Time again for listener mail. Scott, let me introduce you to Jed from the internet. He writes in to say, Jed from New York, from Brooklyn. Jed writes in to say, hi, Ben and Scott. I love your podcast. I've listened to all of them. Ironically, I live in Brooklyn, New York, and don't even have a car. So I listen to them on the train on the way to Manhattan for work. Your recent podcast on fire trucks got me going. How do sirens work? I'm sure they're just big loudspeakers living in New York City. You can imagine I hear a lot of them. I was just there. That's true, Scott. Mm-hmm. And they make different sounds. There's the long wailing siren on fire engines, the quick up, down that sound like European police cars, the loud chirp that ambulances make at intersections. This weird new one on police cars is just a short, low-pitched burst, and there are many more.
Yeah.
Do these different sirens have different meanings or uses? Sometimes they'll switch between different ones during a pursuit. Why?
Wow.
That's a great question.
Yeah, that is a great question. I don't know if I have a complete answer for this one, but I do know that I can almost pick out the difference between a fire engine and a police car and an ambulance when they're far away still. You can definitely tell a difference between all three of those. As far as, you know, some of the differences between each version of that, like, you know, different ambulances from different manufacturers, maybe.
Yeah.
Different siren manufacturers. I don't know if that's the case or not. It must be. He's saying there's a variety of them. And I didn't know that they had a different sound for pursuit.
And police cars.
Yeah, thankfully I haven't ever had that happen to me.
I think there is a lower pitched one that's more of a warning or emergency assistance kind of thing.
Yeah.
Than the actual, everybody on the street, watch out, we're in pursuit. I think maybe we could do this in a future podcast.
I think so,
again.
Too. Yeah, I mean, just the devices that make those sounds, because are they electronic? Some of them are mechanical.
Yeah.
On the fire engines, they're mechanical, or at least they were. I don't know if they still are or not. So there's actually like a whistle with, you know, one of the little cork balls and it spins around and makes that whirring sound. I know that police cars now have the horn makes a different sound than, you know, it kind of interrupts the siren, and that's what they burst, you know, that sound when they enter an intersection, as they approach, because it's much louder and just real abrupt. This is a good topic.
Yeah,
we should definitely dig into it.
We're going to pick this one up. This became, I guess, almost a preview for the listeners with us talking about this.
Yeah.
Let me tell you real quick. Here's the reason that I thought Jed's email was so funny. He ends it with, you know, his name. And he says, P.S., if it helps, I would tell you that I am 10 years old and in the fifth grade. But that would be a lie.
Jed, why would he say that?
Thank you for being honest and hilarious.
I guess because we've answered a lot of listener mail from youngsters. Is that right?
You know, we get a lot of people writing in. But, you know, some of our – I'm not going to name names, but some of our other podcasts do get a little bit of flack sometimes for maybe answering more email from younger.
Oh, no kidding. Person. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, we have listeners that go up into the 80s. Did you know that? Do you remember that? We got an email from someone who claimed to be an octogenarian. I don't know how old he is at this point, but we have people that, you know, the full range. I mean, from 8 years old up until, you know, apparently the 80s. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think it's a wide appeal, and we try to get to everybody's listener mail. We don't just single out the youth.
We don't. Yeah, yeah. We're pretty much just into high speed stuff. And
so keep it fair. Keep it fair.
Anyone who's into high speed stuff is, as far as we're concerned, down with us, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, even my mom says she listens, but I don't know if I believe her.
Really?
I think she's just being nice. I'm an only child.
I know my mom doesn't listen.
Aw.
Yeah.
It's okay, man.
I don't think my dad does either. Nor do any of my friends.
I'm your friend. I listen.
I listen to the show. I don't really spread the word because, you know, got to hear my own voice.
Spreading the word. That's right. That's how we have to end it.
Exactly.
We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We've got a marvelous edutainmental. That didn't work. Edutainment, yeah. But mental. Blog on the website.
Yep.
And let's see. I think.
Well, there's just the auto station, I guess, the auto channel on our site, which is, you know, you can find that on the homepage, easy enough, the auto channel. And it's just real simple to, you know, navigate around and find whatever you want, because we've got a pretty good library of all things automotive at this point.
And you guys, Scott works really hard on this. Sometimes after I've just beaten my newest record in Minesweeper, I'll swing by on the way to get a Coke or something, and he is just tapping away at this. So you can find so much information about all things automotive related on our website. And if there's something that we have failed to address, if there's something that we forgot, please do us a favor and send us an email.
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.